Coming up on Life is a Festival.
It's called a jade egg because it was originally made of jade, which is a very precious stone and very healing, used by the Chinese in ancient times. But now they can be made of various crystals. The ones that we use for the practice are drilled jade eggs so that you can thread a cord through it, a string through it, so that you can hold on to that and you can feel where your jade egg is when it's inside you. By using the egg, you are toning your vagina and your uterus. You're toning your pelvic floor and aligning your ovaries and your uterus. And it's also good for detoxing and releasing emotions that get trapped in the tissues of the vagina and the uterus.
Hello, my friends and fellow travelers. Welcome back to Life is a Festival. I am your host, Eamon Armstrong. Today, we have part two of the Sexual Kung Fu series. Part one with Master Mantak Chia was the Yang episode focused on male bodies. Today, we are doing the Yin episode focused on women's bodies. And I am speaking with Jillian Reed, who is the senior women's instructor at Tao Garden. And you can just hear in the sound of her voice that she is truly living what she is teaching others. So on the show, we start with Jillian's background, how she started in Christianity and moved into Tai Chi and ultimately Qigong and working with Mantak Chia. We talk about how to understand the Tao through the Western conceptual mind, which is what I have, and I'm guessing is probably what you have. We go into the Nine Flowers Qigong, which is helpful for regulating menstruation. We talk about yin, yang, and gender fluidity. Jillian shares her Taoist women's morning ritual. Then we talk about the jade egg, what it is and how you use it. And this is one of the features that many women have been very interested in the retreat and in general. I never knew anything about a jade egg. It's not really my apparatus, but it is very helpful for women. And it was cool to learn about that. One thing that Jillian shares is how to use your yin, if you are a woman, to connect with a male partner. Now, I recognize that many people listening may not fall into various categories, but the principles of yin and yang are helpful nonetheless. We discuss healing Tao and spiritual seeking culture, as well as psychedelics. And I ask Jillian about BDSM. So you'll hear how that goes. And then finally, is the commercialization and proliferation of these healing practices positive or negative? So really bringing it all home to this broader idea of a spiritual marketplace and a buffet of healing. What should we be doing here? What honors these ancient lineages? What is really helpful in our lives? And as you'll hear, Jillian has great answers to everything because she's super smart. So Jillian was the women's senior instructor at the Taoist Sexuality Retreat I attended last month in Chiang Mai. She is trained in Tai Chi under Master Franco Mascola with significant contributions to the Tai Chi Research Center and the School of Medoto Biro Spirali, where she is a senior instructor. Her journey in internal arts like Qigong, Tai Chi, and various martial arts has been transformative for her, which has guided her to help others achieve health and spiritual growth. She was trained by Grandmaster Mantak Chia, who you may have heard in the last episode if you tuned into that, and she is a senior instructor and holistic operator of the Universal Healing Tao System and the Italian coordinator and organizer for the Tao Garden community. One note before we move forward. I don't like to say sorry unless I'm sorry. So if I'm late for something, which is an infrequent occurrence, but I prefer to say thank you for your patience rather than I'm sorry I was late. And I certainly don't like to make up false excuses and say, sorry, I was late. There was traffic. There was no traffic. I like to say thank you for your patience. However, there are times when I misstep and I like to say that I'm sorry. Here's the thing. I wanted to publish this a week ago, because Jillian has a women's circle that started yesterday. And the goal was to get this out there so you could hear it. And if you were inspired, you would be able to join that women's circle. It's a 6-week circle kicked off on January 13th. So, dear listeners, I'm sorry that I did not get that to you in time. Now, you can join late. That's totally fine. I checked in with Jillian. And if you really resonate with this episode, she basically is going to spend the next 6 weeks teaching everything that we just talked about in a woman's circle. So you would miss the first one. But if you're listening to this now and you feel so inspired, there will be a link in the show notes so that you can potentially join that. Okay, so with that, I give you the masterful, elegant, and wise Jillian Reid.
Considering your relationship to energy, is there anything that you would suggest that you and I do to prepare ourselves for this conversation?
Just smile into your heart, and that will allow us to connect. Just to plug in to all the information in the universe and to connect together. Mm.
I understand it as an inner smile, but you physically smile as well, yes?
You do slightly physically smile, because it's not like you have to have a grin, but if you think about when you smile, you can even smile inside everything. The cells kind of like light up, and you can see a smile in someone, even though their mouth isn't actually really smiling, physically smiling. You can feel the energy inside in your cells. Mm. So your eyes smile, and your mouth smiles, and all the cells in your body smile.
I'm a fan of a Buddhist teacher named Tara Brach, and mm-hmm. she does these guided meditations where you do a body scan and you smile. And you smile into your eyes and you smile as you're moving through your body. It reminds me, although that's more of a Vipassana body scan versus the smiling into the organs, that's more of the Taoist approach. So a little bit different, but similarly using the smile, which I like.
Yeah. Let's say the Taoist approach starts from our magnetic field, from our Wi-Fi, which is the heart, which has that connection to the universe, has that automatic return button. So when we activate that powerful energy of the heart, which is in the center of your chest, it expands to all the cells and then expands the magnetic field of the body, the aura, and so you can also connect out.
Mm. I love that.
And if we think about it, our heart, it sends a message to the whole body through the blood. And so if we can attune that message to love and to gratitude by activating that smile and the expansion of that message, we've got all the cells.
And that's an embodied, focused kind of self-love. Because if you are not practicing self-love, then your heart is not sending a message of love to the rest of your body. And you're, as we understand in traditional Chinese medicine, when one organ is out of alignment, then all of the other organs that relate to it are out of alignment, and you're out of alignment. So it's starting with the heart makes a lot of sense, and starting with that kind of self-love connection to the heart and letting the heart bring love to the other organs and kind of bringing harmony, which is what you have been teaching in such an effortless way, by the way, in our evening practice. Such a nice way to end the night.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask you some of the same questions that I asked Master Chia. You know, we're talking a lot about energy, and I'm curious, how is your energy today?
My energy today, let's say that I've been very busy lately. And so I am physically tired because I've been staying up late working on some projects, and I'm not one for staying up late. I'm a true Taoist in that fact, you know, I wake up when the cockerel crows and go to bed when he goes to sleep. But my energy is still vibrant inside. My cells are still alive and vibrating. And I know that all I need to do is just connect to my Dantian, to my navel, my central power station, and it will easily charge.
That's very inspiring. I'm sure people tuning in to listen are like, ooh, I would like to be energized while very tired with all my projects. Because you're doing stuff in Italy at the moment too, right? You've got some online course stuff that's beginning around this time. Am I right in that?
That's right, yeah. I actually have my spoon in many pots mixing, because, yes, I'm based in Italy when I'm not in Thailand during the winter, but I also travel around the world a lot doing workshops in different places. And also the fact of me being here in Tao Garden puts me in contact with a lot of people around the world. So the courses that I do are in presence in different countries, also in Italy and in Europe, and then online, constantly online, so I can gather the people and follow the people that I meet.
So you are quite the global citizen these days.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
In 1992, you started studying Tai Chi.
That's right.
I'm curious, what brought you to studying martial arts?
I'll have to take it back a step. I've always been a spiritual person as a child. I am of Jamaican origin, so the Caribbean. And back in the days, you always went to church and so on. And I continued to go to church even after my brothers and sisters who were older than me had stopped going. And I was always looking for some connection, and to connect to spirit was what I was searching for, and listening. When I moved to Italy, which was about in 1990, 89, somewhere around there, I moved to Italy and I was continuing to meet people to do Bible study and share the feeling of connection, you know, and read together. And then I got to a stage where it was too small for me. The fact of being a Christian was too small. It was too limiting for me. I needed to expand. So I stopped. That all ceased. That all fell away. And I was with a person at a time, I had a friend at the time, who was doing Tai Chi. And he invited me to try a class with his master. And that was it. I was hooked. That was connecting through the movement to spirit. And that was it for me.
So you and Master Chia both grew up in the church. I asked him, you know, does your Christian upbringing impact your teaching now? And he essentially said that in Christianity, he had a desire to be good, but Taoism is what taught him how to do it. With Taoism and the work that obviously he's been doing for 50 years, he brings this goodness into the world. He brings this harmony into the world. You mentioned that just now, you said that the Christianity kind of fell away. Do you feel that aspects of Christianity are involved in your spiritual life now, or was it just a kind of a transition out of that worldview?
Let's say that one of the reasons why Christianity slipped away, I let it fall away, was because when I moved to Italy, I was looking for a community, and I went to different churches. And as well as traveling to Italy, I had traveled to other countries. And by going to other churches and relating with other people, I understood that the so-called Christianity was different in every place. You could find a Catholic in Italy, or a Catholic in the UK, or a Catholic in Mexico, and they were all had different principles, things that they focused on. And so I understood that it was out of our personal needs that we gauged our beliefs in a certain way. But unfortunately, we also said, that is the only way. Okay? That is the only way. And that was something that I wasn't comfortable with. So that's why I said I needed more space. What I was looking for was the essence. Okay, and that is what I found in Master Chia's work and working with Qigong, and when I did my Tai Chi. I was looking for the essence. But I have to say that obviously Christianity was a big part of my life, and it was a programming for me. So over the years, I have worked hard on releasing that.
Tell me about Master Franco Mescala. Mm. He was your Tai Chi master. I'd like to know a little bit about him because I understand that he continues to influence your work because not only are you offering Healing Tao in Italy, but you're offering BioSpirals, which is related to some of the work that you did with him. So I'd just like to know a little bit about, you know, how does one find a master or work with a master, and how is that work that you've done in Tai Chi persisting through your work with this internal alchemy that you're doing here with Master Chia?
So when I started doing a Tai Chi and I spoke about meeting my friend's master, that was Franco Mescola. And he really, through the practice, he helped me to connect, to embody the energy and really open my path to freedom through movement. Because he wasn't a typical Tai Chi master that said, it's only this way, and you have to put your feet at 45 degrees, and you have to this and the other. Obviously, there were pathways. We did a lot of sets, we did a lot of sequences and so on, but he encouraged exploration. And therefore, I was able to connect through those movements. And he created the BioSpirals Qigong, which is, for me, pure connection. But when he passed away, which was in 2010, I believe I remember rightly, when he passed away, it was like I found myself not having an anchor. Mm. And because he taught and he moved through spirit, there were many things that I didn't know. And I had to find out through my own connection. So when I started to increase my studies with Master Chia, because I was already studying with him, actually, it was Master Franco Mescola that introduced me to Master Chia's work. Then when Franco Mescola passed away, I started to delve in much deeper into Master Chia's work. And there I understood all the connections because it was logic. And the systematic way that Master Chia hands over all the information gave me the true understanding and the pathways to be able to not only understand, but to enhance and then pass the teachings on.
So it's interesting you're talking about logic. I'm so skeptical. I do Vipassana and ayahuasca, I do these things, but I'm so skeptical. And I've actually had a difficult time understanding the energy in my body. And I'm curious, what advice do you have for Westerners who have a very conceptual mind, who are approaching this practice for the first time and are kind of a bit lost? Are these things to be seen as metaphoric? Are they ways of bypassing a conceptual mind to understand energy? How do we approach some of the stuff that feels, for lack of a better term, just mythic and perhaps even counter to our Western medical understanding?
Let's say for the Western mind, it is quite difficult. It's been quite easy for me because of my character, because I don't really use my logic mind. I connect through a feeling. And connecting through a feeling, I can relate what is said to what is felt. So I would encourage the Westerners to come down into their dantian, come down into their body. And by connecting, you can let the universe, let spirit guide you instead of your logical mind. That's a big one.
You know, it's funny, sometimes we need to get hit with a sledgehammer to do that. And for me, when I first arrived at the course, I was very resistant to certain things. And when I had the Kersai treatment, which we'll talk about a little bit later, I spoke about it on the last podcast, it was so unequivocal in the way that it changed my relationship to my anxiety and to my ruminating thoughts that I was like, okay, whatever else, something is here that is solving something medically for me that I have looked everywhere to find a solution for. And that kind of clarity, I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go with it. I'm going to stop fighting it. So I think that sometimes for some of us who are approaching these practices and we come to them through different reasons, you know, whether I as a man wish to become multi-orgasmic or whether we're coming for healing, whether we're coming because we don't know where else to look, I guess there's a little bit of a show up and do the practices until something catches that, in a sense, overrides your skeptical resistance. Would you say that's a reasonable approach? Just keep doing the practices and being present until we see something that kind of gives us some sort of proof in our experience, in our relation to our bodies?
Definitely so. But we also have to have a reason why we show up and keep doing the practices, just having faith that something will shift. So there has to be a reason behind that. For some people, it's because they want to become multi-orgasmic, or they have some issue to solve. And as you say, sometimes we do need a bop on the head. And that is what happens to us in life when we find ourselves so low. All we can do, all is left, is just to connect, just to let it flow. Mm. For many people in their life, there is a reason why they want to grow. So they can just hold on to that, keep doing the practices, and wait for things to shift.
So there's this book, The Multi-Orgasmic Man, which was my introduction to Master Chia's work. And I imagine that there are a lot of men who come to this work because being a multi-orgasmic man is pretty attractive. Like, mm-hmm. whether you're spiritual or not, I can have rolling orgasms. Okay, I'll practice this.
Yeah.
So that brings a lot of men to the table. What would you say is the most common reason that a person in a woman's body, in a female body, comes to this work? Because you are already multi-orgasmic. You don't have to do all this pelvic contraction, or maybe it helps, but you don't have the same thing we've got. So I'm curious, in working with women who come to this practice, what are some of the most common reasons that women come to this practice?
Well, before I answer you, I'll correct you there, because yes, we do have to do all this pelvic contraction.
Okay, well, I figured you got a bit of a head start, let's
yes,
be honest,
we do.
Because
yeah.
we multi-orgasm, we get a sneeze and that's it on our side. And we got to get that sneeze out. Like, it's not a good practice. And yes, of course, all of the practices are nurturing. There are many women who are not able to access their orgasm,
mm-hmm.
and then that brings them to the table. But yeah, I'm just curious of the different reasons that women come to this work.
The different reasons that women come to this work is because they want to reach inner harmony, inner balance. That could be emotional balance and control and stability in themselves. That could be awakening their vibrancy, their sexual vibrancy inside. And the inner balance also has a lot to do with women's menstrual cycle, because during the fertile years, but also during the non-fertile years when we're going through menopause, there's a lot of imbalance. So that has a lot to do with our emotional state and affects our whole world.
Yeah, I've done a lot of preparation for this conversation, and the menstrual balance seems to be a question that comes up so frequently with women who are approaching this work. It's so typical of the West, where it's like, take a birth control pill.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make it better. That's going to regulate your hormones. But of course, so many women these days do not want to take birth control pills because
yeah.
there's different side effects and complications. Would you have advice for a woman listening to this podcast right now who has a menstrual cycle that a lot of cramps, a lot of hormonal swings? Are there practices that she could do today that would help to shift that for her?
Definitely so. We always speak about, well, doctors, you know, science always speak about getting physical activity in a certain way, especially like stretching, okay, and opening the body and toning the body helps to align the ovaries and release the tension in the hips and align the ovaries and the uterus, which is part of the problem why women have cramps and difficulties with their menstrual cycle. A very important thing that we have our own hormone factory. So when we are able to activate our hormones, we can help them to regulate and therefore regulate the cycle. So to do that, there's a very simple practice, which is a nipple massage, okay? So you activate the arousal energy in your nipples by either massaging around the outside of the nipple to activate them, or massaging on the nipple. It depends each woman how much stimulation they need and how they like to work with themselves. And they bring that soft and gentle arousal energy when it starts to warm and expand. They bring that into the center of their chest, behind the sternum, to activate the thymus gland. And then they bring that gentle, soft arousal energy into their thyroid and parathyroid, up into the center of their brain where all the important glands are. That we have the pituitary gland, the pineal gland, thalamus, hypothalamus, etc. And then they start to bring that activation, the arousal, down into the spleen and pancreas, down into the ovaries, down into the uterus, and connect right down into the clitoris.
And this is the nine flowers Qigong.
That's the nine flowers Qigong, yes.
Nice. Is there any kind of video or instruction for that that we can put in the show notes so that someone can tap right into that?
You can find it in the book for women.
Okay.
You can perhaps put in a link to our
few. I'm going to put so many links in this.
Yeah.
So I love that we have jumped directly into very actionable practices, because one thing that I love about this work is that these are practices that you can just do and you can see results. But I want to take a step back. I'm doing two podcasts. Mm-hmm. One is Yang and one is Yin.
Yes.
And so I want to talk a little bit about Yin and Yang. And I'd also love to place it in the context of the kind of modern revolution in gender that we're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
This movement of gender fluid, gender non-binary. This yin-yang energy, this yin-yang concept is, in what I've read in Taoism, is very much masculine-feminine. The yang is masculine, the yin is feminine. But I'd love to talk a little bit about your understanding of yin and yang, and also how you see that intersecting with modern understandings of gender, queerness, changing binaries.
So yin and yang, it's important to understand that there's no absolute, okay? So when we're talking about yin and yang, we have to look at it in its concept, okay? So within a man, there is yin, and within a woman, there is yang. And we all have our different percentages of how we express the yin and the yang. When it comes to speaking about yang, we think about something protective, something external, a strong rising energy, okay? Something powerful. But at the same time, yin is very powerful because it's something more internal, it's something more nourishing, and it's something softer. But if we think about, for example, water, the sea, an ocean, big waves, we can say that's yang, okay? And the big waves have the possibility of doing a lot of damage. They do a lot of damage on the shores. The waves can throw big boulders way over into the village. But at the same time, yin, a little drop of water, constantly dropping, can make a hole in a rock. So it's difficult to speak about the concept of yin and yang being something fixed and set, because they weave and they mingle into each other constantly.
Something that was once expressed to me by a Taoist was this idea of a kind of yang in the masculine that's powerful, but a yin in the masculine that's delicate and sensitive, like an Achilles heel. Men are very sensitive. I'm a very sensitive man. There's a sensitivity that's very yin in the kind of yang. And then with women, that there's this yin nurturing, perhaps sometimes delicate, but then there's also this yang of giving birth and endurance and this kind of fecund energy of this incredible strength. And so this idea of the yin within the yang within the yin and the way that they innervate with each other, actually perhaps we can look at this kind of modern gender fluidity through that lens to say that perhaps in this modern world, we can cultivate yin and cultivate yang. And I as a man can not only cultivate yin energy in terms of doing yin yoga or cultivating kidneys, that is a very yin organ, but I can also cultivate the feminine in myself. I can cultivate my feminine qualities as kind of yin qualities and maybe use these concepts not as fixed binaries that hold us, but rather looking at their natural fluidity as a model for our own fluidity. Does that make sense? Does that work?
It does, yes, definitely so. I agree with you. I tend to get the impression, I tend to feel that today, that is actually what's coming, this awakening of the yin within the yang and the yang within the yin. But with all things, for the change to come about, there's often an excess, you know, you often go to extremes. The fact that people are feeling the necessity to change sex or to be particularly aggressive women, we're finding in also leading countries, that they're shifting to one side of the scale and forgetting about the other side of the scale. And that's something that happens with change, but it's important to keep your center and explore both ends of the scale by holding your center and knowing who you are and enriching yourself by collecting and cultivating both sides.
Oh, I love that. I think that's so helpful. Philosophically, I believe that it is most delightful to move through this world in a way that expands possibility, expands connection, allows you to have more options, allows you to be free of limitations. We talk a lot about blockages of energy, of stagnation, and I think we have these psychological blockages. So for me, in my male body, who grew up not wanting to be a girly boy, there was a lot of exiling my feminine. I didn't want to wear pink or sing or dance, and I love all of that stuff so much. And then as I was trying to return this exiled feminine, I see myself as kind of overcorrecting in a certain way and neglecting aspects of masculinity, that kind of baby with the bathwater sort of thing, where it's like, oh, there is this beautiful protectiveness that is part of my personal masculinity that I kind of rejected as, oh, that's toxic masculinity. And then coming back into balance, I was like, no, I have a big body. I can protect people. And that actually feels good, and it doesn't feel counter to what I've explored in the feminine and these kind of yin qualities. So I think that's super wise. And I think it's interesting that young people today in their exploration of gender, young people tend to just be in extremes because they're just so excited about everything.
Yes.
And so we have these young people who are like, now I'm this, now I'm that. And there's a lot of like big identity movements. But I think as we get older, balance is a lot more attractive.
That's right. But unfortunately, to add to that, we have social media and advertising and also the government pushing people to, not to say to accept certain, they're giving these ideas, they're giving these ideals, these role models that obviously young people are very susceptible to. Young people look outside to understand who they are. And therefore, it's a little bit more difficult for them to connect to who they really are, because the information outside that is telling them that not only is it okay to be as you are, but you should be this way or you should be that way because that's how things are at the moment. So we have to wait, as you say, until they get to the more mature stage to be able to come back to their center and find that harmony of who they really are and who they really feel comfortable being.
So today's podcast is titled Yin, and part of the intention here is to speak to the female body. In the previous episode, we spoke to the male body. So we're going to spend a little time speaking of the female body. And by that, I don't mean my feminine inside, which is lovely, but I mean an actual female body that operates functionally different than a male body. And some of the practices work for both, but some of the practices are unique. And so I just want to start with a woman approaching these inner alchemy practices. What are the first steps? What are the ways, if you bring a woman's body into this inner alchemy, using sexual energy to heal the mind and body, to heal the spirit, where does a woman start?
So a woman is used to expressing her emotions. And we are also often unstable emotionally, as in we have hormonal cycles that keep us a little bit in balance at certain times of our month or certain times of our life. So we have to remember, if we're talking about coming to the Tao, cultivating sexual energy, that sexual energy increases anything that it finds in its path, multiplies anything that it finds in its path.
In psychedelics, we call that a non-specific amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
I think sexual energy is definitely a non-specific amplifier.
Yes. And therefore, it's really important for the woman, this is also for men, to work on the basics, and that is the six healing sounds and the inner smile. So cultivating self-love and sorting out emotional garbage, the daily emotional garbage and whatever comes up, what could be ancestral, which could be toxic because it's something that we've been holding on for a long time.
So we start with these beginning practices and then the practices build. One thing I've found is that there's a lot of practices. So, you know, when we're thinking about having a daily ritual, it can be a little bit overwhelming. You know, this one is very important, this one is very important. What are like the basic practices that you as a woman use daily?
Okay. So I awake in the morning, and before I get out of bed, I am smiling to my whole body. And I'm grateful, and I'm just so thankful for everything that I have, just pure gratitude. So I awaken my cells with that gratitude of being here, okay? And so I attune my upper mind, my logic mind, to the abundance of the universe, and I align my emotions also for the day. So setting the scene for the day, we say, you know, I got out the wrong side of the bed this morning because you got a mopey face or you're angry or something. You want to set the scene for the day before you get out of bed. So you open your eyes, or you got your eyes closed, and you connect to your body. You feel your body, you're grateful for your body, and that's the first thing, okay? And then, while I'm in bed, we may have people who find it difficult to wake up in the morning, okay? Or just the alarm goes and they have to jump out of bed and run. So you can set your alarm a little bit earlier, maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes earlier, just a tiny bit. Do some stretching in bed. Open your physical body in bed, hoping that you don't disturb your partner or your husband, okay? Or you can get up and just do a little stretch, you know? We stretch and yawn in the morning, why not do that? Open your physical body, do a little shaking, shake your breasts. As you're shaking, you're connecting to the earth, feeling that support, and you're activating your sexual energy. And you're good to go.
Do you do any kind of pleasure practice first thing in the morning? You were talking about stimulating the nipples, creating that arousal energy. Is a full-on pleasure practice or microcosmic orbit, is that part of like a daily ritual, or where does that fit into things?
So, for example, we're all different, okay? I would do my pleasure practice in the morning. I can also do it in the shower, okay? I like to start with a massage. When I connect to my body, I have my bottle of oil beside my bed, and I'll do my breast massage in bed and massage my vagina while I'm in bed and just breathe, do some ovarian breathing. And then when I have my shower, when I've had my shower, I can use my egg, and I use it after the shower, okay? I can just use my egg and do my orbit. So the orbit can be also while you're doing your stretching. You just roll your spine and breathe and do your orbit.
Can you explain the microcosmic orbit for those who are not familiar?
So the microcosmic orbit is connecting your back energetic channel that runs from your perineum up your spine. So through your coccyx, sacrum, lumbar, thoracic, and your cervical right up to the crown of your head, and it actually finishes down on your upper palate, so below your nose. And then the other channel, the front channel, will run from your bottom lip down the front, your throat, your heart, your solar plexus, that's between your navel and the tip of your sternum, your navel, towards your sexual organs, where your pubic bone is, and down to your perineum, which is the soft part between your anus and your sexual organs. And so the microcosmic orbit, by connecting the tip of your tongue behind your incisors on your top palate, you're creating a bridge which connects the back channel and the front channel. And when we do the orbit, we create one continuous cycle of energy, of the energy running up the spine and down the front.
And we'll have links in the show notes to a lot of this material if mm-hmm. you want to go deeper. You mentioned your egg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the big thing that comes up with men is the multi-orgasmic thing.
Yes.
It seems like the big thing that comes up with women is the jade egg,
yeah.
which is very mysterious to me because because I don't a jade egg, I think, would be dangerous if I tried to use it. I don't think it would work for a male body. Let's talk about jade eggs. What is a jade egg? Why does a woman use it? What are the benefits?
Okay. A jade egg, it's called a jade egg because it was originally made of jade, which is a very precious stone and very healing, used by the Chinese in ancient times. But now they can be made of various crystals. And the ones that we use for the practice are drilled jade eggs, so that you can thread a cord through it, a string through it, so that you can hold on to that and you can feel where your jade egg is when it's inside you. And you can also do the practices by holding the jade eggs, squeezing it and giving a counterforce by pulling down on the string. You don't want to actually pull the jade egg out with the string. You want to create a counterforce. So you're gently tugging on the string whilst you're pulling up with the whole vagina and the uterus.
And what are the particular benefits of using this jade egg?
So there are different sizes of jade egg also, small, medium, and large. By using the egg, you are toning your vagina and your uterus because the pulling up motion reaches right up into your uterus, and so you're toning your pelvic floor. Depending on the direction that you're pulling in, you're also toning the muscle chains and the ligaments and tendons that are holding your uterus and aligning your ovaries and your uterus. And it's also good for detoxing and releasing emotions that get trapped in the tissues of the vagina and the uterus.
That actually leads me to a question that I've been curious about. I got the Kersai massage. I've done it 3 times now.
Mm-hmm.
And what I learned in that, and for the listener who might not have listened to the previous episode where I spoke about it a fair amount, this is the most impactful experience that I had here. The most immediate change in my physiology was a testicle massage. I mean, it was the whole genital region massage, but specifically moving heavy metals, sediment, toxins, stagnancy out of my testes, which no idea that I even had them there because I don't really pay that much attention to my testicles.
Yeah.
Now I do, but I didn't. And then that just led to a massive reduction in anxiety, rumination. It really changed me. And I know that there's a Kersai massage for women as well. Is it a similar thing where it's like a sediment toxin buildup in the genitals for women?
Similar.
Are women having the same kind of, oh my God, I feel so different?
Definitely so. Definitely so, because women are also, as we know, women are yin, okay? And yin means internal. Yin is a container. Women are containers, and the vagina is a container. The uterus is a container. And we have this tendency of collecting and holding energy. And we hold a lot of energy in our vagina. And then it's also the lower part of our body where we can get a lot of sediment. And also during orgasm, the genitals get flooded with blood. And a lot of the heavy metal and the toxins get stuck in there.
Is it similar to for men where you feel this kind of sharp, achy pain? For me, I felt sharp, achy pain in my testicles that I could feel shooting up to my kidneys. Mm-hmm. And that was actually moving this material up into my kidneys where it could be filtered out. Is it a similar thing for women when they have that? It's a massage that then moves things through the kidneys?
It's different because for women, you go inside and massage the internal wall of the vagina. And there's a lot of sediment and sand in there. It can feel very sandy. And that's where the sediment is. And then there can also be menstruation problems because there's misalignment. I was talking about the tendons and the ligaments. And so the massage can also help to release the tissues and help that realignment.
So we're speaking of women as yin, men as yang. And obviously there are aspects of both and there's a fluidity. For the sake of simplicity, what is your suggestion for the yin in dealing with the yang? To put it simply, for a woman listener who has a male partner, do you have any advice?
Okay. So when we're looking for harmony and we're understanding yang energy as being external, as being protective, as being quite strong and externally powerful, protection is also a shield. So to find balance, it's easier for the yin of the woman to connect to the yin of the man and not use yang to connect to the yang man. The approach that you have, you want to get to his core, you want to be soft and gentle, you want to allow him to open up and connect to your yin, and that way you'll be able to get to his core and make those changes or that connection that you need.
You know, it's so often this thing happens, and I've had it. There's a couple in the course that has been going through this exact thing, which is a woman wishing to lead a man with her yang. Mm. And that for the man, that can feel emasculating, and it can actually make us, we kind of shrink, we feel corrected. Yeah. It's a kind of this unconscious mother energy. Mm. That's how it feels on our end. And the funny thing is the woman can be, and often is, right in what they're saying.
Yes.
You know, I had a former girlfriend. She was right when she was correcting me, and actually I benefited from her feedback, but the nature of this kind of yang, almost corrective energy, I just folded in response to it and just ended up feeling resentful. Even though looking back, I'm like, oh, this is great ideas, super helpful. And I think looking at that dynamic through the lens of yin and yang is actually super helpful because the yin does open up the yang in the man. And I often feel like women are looking for like that yang energy in a man. They're looking for a man's truth and power and integrity and presence. And when they're not getting it, then they bring the yang themselves, but it actually has the counter effect.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah.
So how does a woman really connect with her yin in that context? Because it must be very frustrating for a woman when they're like, God, just do the thing, guy. Right? And she wants to be like, she wants to shake and be like, do the thing.
Yeah.
How would you suggest for a woman to really tap into her yin when she's in that state of frustration?
So this is where we come to the practices, right?
Because I knew it was going to be the practices.
I'm sorry, honey. Because the practices are about re-educating ourselves and finding balance, okay? Someone said to me when we were doing the women's practices, they were talking about finding relief and balance with the menstrual cycle. So can we do these practices while we're on our cycle? And I'm like, when you're having a baby, you do the preparation before. You don't start saying, you know, like, what shall I do and what are the preparations and whatever when you're actually in labor. You just let it flow when you're in labor, and it will flow because you have re-educated your body and done your homework, okay? So it's a similar thing. You have to continue to work on yourself so that when you're in a situation where it is difficult, because you would really like to shake him and say, come on, just get it, you know? You can actually come into yourself and connect to all the virtues of your organs, feeling compassion. So understanding where your partner is coming from, okay? And stay in the calm and look for that entrance into his yin to connect.
I love that. I'm happy I asked this question too, because it's something that seems to come up so often. And so I'll use it as a hook to get guys to listen to this episode too. I'll be like, listen to the yin one, because there's lots of stuff for you, including this thing. Because it is, you know, this is a perennial challenge with men and women. And it is a perennial sort of challenge, the yin and yang out of balance without our understanding of it. We tend to run into the same cycles and the same problems. And I love that your instruction here is, do the practice and don't wait until the house is on fire. Build the practice so that you're already prepared for this. And a lot of what you've said, and Master Chia as well, has just indicated that daily practice is really the thing.
Yes.
A lot of people don't do daily practice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people who listen to this show are looking for spiritual silver bullets, are looking for the thing. I know I do. I love the thing. I always want to find the thing. And so people are doing Vipassana, 10 days of silent meditation. They're going and they're drinking ayahuasca. They're going to Burning Man. I love going to Burning Man. But they're going to these things. How do you feel that this healing Tao work fits into this overall kind of spiritual marketplace where people are just going and sampling these different things? How does this work relate to this seeking landscape?
So I understand that when you go to a workshop, one of Master Chia's workshops, it can be intense, and there is a lot of practice in there. There is a lot of practice in there. And you can come away feeling overwhelmed.
Correct. I'm still overwhelmed. I've been here 10 days.
Okay. But the fact that he is backed up by instructors, you know, I myself do the evening practice, and then Walter does the morning practices. This is to help you focus, to focus and get something down and take something away that you can work on. And then the fact that there is a community, there are instructors everywhere, someone that you can connect to and get discipline. Because we need to build on practices, be part of something to keep something going, to have that discipline to keep going. And then we won't need to, we'll be able to really get the benefits, focus on and understand piece by piece, and understand through the instructor that's relaying the practices to us in a more accessible way, bring those practices into our daily life.
Sounds like you're telling me what I need to do when I leave here.
Yeah.
It's so easy after having an experience like this to just let it fall away and to not do the practices. And I'm going to do my best.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried ayahuasca?
No, I haven't.
Any psychedelics? Has that been part of your journey?
No, it has not.
Master Chia said the same thing. I was hoping I'd get him. I was hoping he was, you know, he lived in New York. I don't know, maybe he did some ayahuasca. I was just curious, is there a position that this school has around the use of psychedelics? Are they counterindicated with the energy work we're doing? I ask this in part because I have a hard time feeling the energy. And to me, the idea of lowering the default mode network through the use of psychedelic medicine seems like that could be a way of accessing a deeper sensitivity and connection to the energy. But maybe that's contraindicated. Maybe if I'm using a psychedelic, maybe I might hallucinate the energy. You know, do you have a position, or does the school have a position on the value of psychedelics?
Okay, so Taoists, yes, have a position, which I'll explain. And I myself have a position because I've always been a Taoist at heart. Now that I look back from a child, I've always been an energy saver, always, regarding managing my emotions, regarding everything in my life, looking for harmony. Taoists believe that the kidneys store jing, okay? And they store the ancestral energy and also the energy that we will need when we leave this world, okay? So that's the backup power for our rocket to get back up there, send our spirit and soul back up there. And that's one of the main reasons why we do the energy cultivation in the Taoist practices, because we are not calling on our reserve energy, but we are cultivating our own and building our own personal energy. Okay, for everyday life and also for the spiritual growth. So when we're using psychedelics and when we're also in everyday life not looking after what we eat or drinking and all these kind of things that are dispersing our energy, our backup energy, that is not a good thing. So it doesn't really help you to connect to your body when you're back here on the earth.
So you connect when you're in the psychedelic space, but what you're saying is that it takes energy from your reserves in a way that from a Taoist perspective is unhelpful.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Okay, I've got another modern concept here that I want to get a Taoist lens on.
Okay.
So BDSM.
Sorry?
BDSM. Are you familiar with BDSM?
No,
kink?
I'm not.
Sexual kink, kinky fetish kind of stuff. Are you familiar with this at all?
I'm not really familiar, but I know where you're coming from.
Okay, great. I didn't think that this would be your practice, to be honest with you. So I've explored kink in my life, and I've found it for me as a way of amplifying polarity, amplifying, for my experience, a yang and yin energy in a kind of like dominant submission. Now, obviously, this is done in a very ethical way with a lot of conversation and consent. I'm curious what the Taoist perspective, whether there's an official perspective in terms of inner alchemy and healing Tao, is BDSM, again, does it destroy our reserves? Is it not virtuous? Is it negative in some way? Or is it potentially something that can be used to stimulate arousal and then be able to do a spiritual practice? Does BDSM have a place in Taoism?
I would say not.
I knew you'd say not.
I would say not.
I somehow saw that. As I was formulating the question, I was like, I know where this is going.
Okay, and I'll come back to the point of Taoism. The point of Taoism is cultivating energy inside your body. If you've noticed, we don't use music when we're practicing, because the senses are connected to the organs, and the organs are where the souls and spirits reside. So when we overstimulate the senses, or if we're trying to cultivate sexual energy, we want to keep our senses inside and cultivate inside, and then we can move that up and out. So any extreme is not looked upon as beneficial for the Tao.
What about sexual fantasy generally? Mm-hmm. So this is a personal question for me, because sexual fantasy is my favorite thing. Does fantasy work in the context of this practice? If we are doing these practices, should we move away from sexual fantasy? How does fantasy relate to this Taoist inner alchemy?
I don't see personally anything wrong with fantasy or sexual stimulation or fulfilling one's desires. If that can help activate the sexual energy, then that's okay. But quite often, people can get hooked on those mechanisms.
So hooked.
Yeah.
I'm so hooked.
Okay.
I'm still hooked. And I'm trying to get unhooked, but I'm definitely still hooked.
Yeah. And then the energy will stay outside the body, and it won't be an inner cultivation.
That makes sense. So would you say that if someone is hooked on fantasy, I'm not naming any names, but if someone is hooked on fantasy, is the process to just really try to like not fantasize at all? Or is it about making a sort of gentle transition by using some of these sensation practices, trying to get more in the body, doing the practices, but slowly transitioning? Or don't fantasize and kind of wait for the energy to kind of return? Do you have a suggestion?
Personally, I don't believe in cold turkey.
Yeah, I don't either. Just want more turkey.
Okay. And anything we do in that respect of inhibiting what we feel are our needs is going to create tension. And it's going to increase the separation of yin and yang.
Interesting.
So the best thing is to cultivate your own self-love, your inner organs, so your spirits, and they will bring you the understanding and the pathway and the method for making that change that will be more beneficial to you. Believe in the way. Have faith.
Okay, so I'm going to keep doing my practices, and then I'm going to come back, and maybe not come back to Thailand, but I'll reach out to you and I'll tell you how it goes. And
like, okay.
And you, dear listener, I promise I'll tell you too. One thing that I'm really curious about is the proliferation of these practices. So there are different people teaching different things. And there's this neo-tantra movement where people are kind of cherry-picking pieces of tantra and they're bringing that into a practice. Do you feel that the kind of commercialization of some of these practices Is it helpful because it's raising awareness and bringing people to deeper study? Or is it harmful in a sense that it's diluting what is being offered in spaces like this that are more complete practices and offerings?
I would say that it's positive. I would say that it's definitely positive. Putting it out there in the world, people can understand that there's more, and they have many different ways that they can connect and read the world, you know, interpret the world. Obviously, there is a lot out there. They can get caught up in lots of different things. They can encounter many things, but I'm sure that spirit will guide them, and everyone has their own path, and they will meet the practice that will take them to the place where they need to be in this lifetime.
That trust is something that I personally go back and forth with it. Sometimes I'm like, I feel guided. I feel like I'm going the right way. And then sometimes I'm like, I am just in magical thinking, tricking myself. And this is ridiculous. What, I'm just chasing some ephemeral thing. But I'll tell you that Kirsai massage has really changed things for me. And it's reinforced the idea that what we're doing here is impactful. And I can tell you that I intend to, and I commit to, bringing these practices into my daily life and just seeing where I'm at in 6 months, where I'm at in a year, and how much more harmony I can cultivate in myself, and therefore how much more harmony I can support others with. Because, God, this world needs more harmony, for sure.
Yeah, we definitely do. And if I can give you, I can give the listeners a tip, is focus in your center and cultivate your dantian.
And the center is the center dantian area we're talking about, just under the navel in that lower belly area?
Yeah, yeah. Or even just around the navel. Breathe from your belly and focus there, whether it be behind the navel or below the navel, and generate warmth and chi. When you breathe in that area and you focus and spiral, it creates a vortex that sucks energy in. And that helps us to find physical and emotional balance, because the yin qualities are going downwards and the yang is going up. So this separation of thoughts also, you know, oh, I can trust and believe, oh, maybe am I crazy or whatever, emotions coming and going, finding balance, you need to focus in your dantian and let everything pull into the center.
Wow, you just gave us just a perfect little gem right at the end. I was hoping we'd do a little gem at the end, because people listen to the whole episode and then they're going to remember the last thing they heard. And you gave us a good last thing. And as a recap, looking at these different organ systems, we're looking at our heart as just emanating this love to our organs out to the world. And then this power center, our dantian, breathing into this place, cultivating that chi. And then there's these practices, the microcosmic orbit, the jade egg practice, and I'll make sure that there's links in the show notes to all these practices. And I will make sure that there are links in the show notes to you and the work that you are doing, because I can attest to the fact that, I mean, just your presence, just the way you've been doing these evening classes, it's been very impactful. All of the women who've done the classes with you that I don't get to go to have all been singing your praises and very excited that I've had a chance to interview you. So just as a way of closing our conversation, can you direct the listener to where they can find out more about you and your work? And if you have any upcoming offerings, I think probably online is best, considering I don't know that I've got a huge audience in Italy, but where can people connect with you and potentially study with you in the upcoming months?
So I have an association and a website called BioTao Life, and you can find me there, what I offer. I'm also in Facebook and Instagram. You can either find me through Gillian Reed or BioTao Life. And I'm an English speaker. I teach both in English and Italian. So some of my workshops are in Italian and others are bilingual, and that will be written in the program. I have a workshop coming up that starts on the 13th of January, and that is a women's circle.
How long does that go?
That is a 5-week course. And so we do 2 hours once a week. And the practices are the female practices. So we'll be doing the jade egg, the breast massage, the nine flower but also working on the six healing sounds in a smile, the orbit, and structural work, which is working on how to release our, how to make a good alignment of the body to be able to relax, and some Dao Yin for relaxing, which is what we do in the evening together.
Basically, what you're saying is that someone anywhere in the world can learn everything we've been talking about on
That's
this show
right, yeah.
starting on January 13th.
That's right, yes.
That's great.
That's right.
That's so perfect. You're rad. I appreciate you. I really appreciate your evening classes. I thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and providing so much information. And it's so accessible. The way you speak is so accessible. So I just really honor the work you're doing in the world. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, Eamon. It's a pleasure and an honor because I'm sharing my life path, what has made me grow and the tools that I have to be here. And really when I'm doing the practices, I'm just expanding the energy of what I'm actually doing. So I love to share and encourage people.
There are a lot of humans in women's bodies in my life who I think are going to resonate a lot with what you've shared today and want to know more. So thank you for being on Life is a Festival. It's been so great to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for Life is a Festival. If you like the show, you can support it by sharing it with your friends, following it on Spotify, or reviewing it on iTunes. If you'd like to get more involved, you can join our Facebook group, Life is a Festival, where we talk about the show and you can suggest new guests. If you really liked the show and maybe want a little bit more, visit my digital tip jar at patreon.com/lifeisafestival.com. Whatever you do, I hope today's podcast helped you make your life just a little bit more like a festival, and I'll see you on the dance floor.